There is only one thing. Infinity. You are it, and it is the world. Two days ago, on February 22nd, at 1 a.m., I experienced, within a matter of 10 minutes, what I would call a total awakening, a total enlightenment. This was an awakening unlike I had experienced up to this point. I have talked about in the past, and I have shown you even various awakening experiences that I have had, getting glimpses here and there, understanding this and that, putting the pieces together and having these awakenings. But what happened on that night was just incredible, defying all description and all explanation. It was a coming together of all the pieces, of all the facets of this multifaceted jewel that we call enlightenment or non-duality, and realizing that I am everything. That's what I became. All boundaries disappeared, and I became infinite in infinite directions, in infinite dimensions. The materialist paradigm completely melted away, and all that remained was me existing as infinity. This, everything that I'm seeing, everything that you're seeing right now, is infinity itself. It is the absolute. But conventionally, you are experiencing only a little piece of it. And so you're identified with that little piece, and you're not sure how that little piece fits in with what else is going on in the universe. And you don't know what reality is. But here on this night, I became conscious of why all of reality exists and why it is inevitable and why it must exist precisely as it exists. Because what reality is simply infinity itself. Infinity is not something that's hiding somewhere that you're not seeing. This is infinity. Right now, you are at the very center of infinity, your center. But you see, infinity is such a slippery notion that what is the center of infinity? You might wonder. What does that look like? It's not some science fantasy or some fiction that you dream up. It is precisely what you're experiencing right now. You see, by its very nature, infinity must include every single possibility. And therefore, that means that you find yourself as an individual within this infinite singularity. But you're attached to your body, and you're attached to your mind, and you're attached to your present perceptual field, and you feel like that's what confines you. Well, I broke through all those confines that night, and I realized that I am the entire singularity. And whereas I had experienced absolute infinity in various degrees before, and I've talked about that, and I have episodes where I explain the nature of absolute infinity and all that, and that's all valid. But what was different about this experience, this awakening, was that I wasn't just understanding absolute infinity as a sort of object that's separate from me the way that I did in the past. But I actually became it. And I became it so deeply that it became my body. The entire universe is my body. Not just the entire universe, but every single possibility that could ever possibly be, I am. And this is cognized beyond any intellectual, logical, or rational understanding or explanation. it's not even at the level of knowledge. Like, this is something that I know, or something I've deduced, or something that I've figured out. No, it's something that I am. Infinity is my body. There is nothing here. There's nothing behind the eyes. There's nothing inside of me. And in fact, there is no awareness and there is no consciousness. There is not even consciousness. What there is just infinity. Imagine, if you will, that before the universe or reality came into being, there was just nothing. Imagine that. And right there, you have created, unwittingly created, everything. Right there. That's it. Stop right there. Stop at nothing. There's nothing more. It's not like there was nothing and then a bunch of stuff got created somehow through some kind of magical process or some scientific process or some sort of inflationary big bang or whatever. It's not that. It's that there was always just nothing. But then you say, but Leo, what is all this stuff? How did all this stuff come into being then? You don't get it yet. This is what nothing looks like. Nothing doesn't look like an empty blank space or a black hole. That's not nothing. This is precisely nothing. My words are precisely nothing. My face is precisely nothing. My body is precisely nothing. You are precisely nothing. This room is precisely nothing. This entire planet and star system and galaxy and universe is precisely nothing. Nothing is infinity. Infinity is all that there could ever be. Every single object is just a part of what it means for there to be infinity. Infinity is every single possibility. This is the most radical thing you could ever possibly conceive of, which is why you can't conceive of it. During this awakening, my mind became infinite and it traced through to the very infinite corners of the universe. It has, of course, no corners. It goes on forever. And I went on forever. And I felt it. And I felt the full consequences and ramifications of what that means, which means that I exist as absolutely everything. I exist as every single human being who ever lived, both past, present, and future. I exist as every single sentient creature, every single life form that is ever possible, in every possible permutation, doing every possible action that it could possibly do. I exist as every single possible decision point of my life. So if you imagine my life as a human being, I was born and then I had all these little branching decision points, like I could have gone to this school or to that school, or I could have gotten married at this age or that age, or I could have started this kind of business or that kind of business, or I could have walked outside at 6 a.m. or at 6:01 a.m. or at 6:02 a.m. and all the possible permutations and combinations of my life, I am all of them simultaneously. I could have died a trillion times from the moment that I was born to the moment that I'm alive now at this age of 32. And I am all those permutations. And am I all the future permutations, not only of myself, but of every human being and every creature, and not just of every creature, not just all the sentient and all the living creatures, but also of every inanimate object that could ever possibly exist. I exist as every possible inanimate object that ever existed, exists now, or will ever exist. I exist as every single creative invention. Everything that is invented by human beings creatively, every piece of artwork, every piece of music, every film, every video game, every work of literature, every poem, I exist as all of those. They all come from me because I am infinity, and infinity entails absolutely every possible thing that could ever be created. existing simultaneously, and yet at the same time, none of it actually exists, because existence negates itself. Infinity is an object which negates its own existence. So at the same time, it exists and does not exist. In fact, it's beyond existence and non-existence. It is just infinity. That's it. That's why there's everything. But of course, to you, it doesn't feel like there's everything. And that's precisely because everything must include you feeling like right now you're not experiencing everything. Infinity must include all possible finitudes. Every possible limitation is contained within that which is ultimately unlimited. And that's it. That answers everything. This infinity is not something that comes into being over time. It's not something that evolves. It's not something that God creates. It's just the only possibility that there is infinity. There just is infinity. There always only was infinity. There will always only be infinity. It's one object. It's one mega object, which contains within it every other possible object. It's the ultimate superset. It's the set of all sets, the set of all possible sets. That's what reality is. And that's what I am. And there's no difference whatsoever between my physical body or my mind and the camera that I'm looking at, or the light that is shining upon me, or this wall, or this carpet, or this chair, or this coffee table, or that tree, or that dog, or that human being, or that anything. All of them are equivalent and identical to myself. Literally, they are physically me. All there is being. Being, that's what this stuff is. This is not consciousness. There is no perception going on right now. There is only being. And it doesn't look like anything other than what is here. I'm not talking about some magical state. I'm not talking about some sort of flying unicorns and auras and astral projecting yourself somewhere to some different realm or universe, some other dimension. Sure, all those might exist. There might be unicorns on some planet far away in a different galaxy. Sure, there could be that. And if there is that, I am that unicorn. I am that planet. I am that galaxy. I am every possibility, including this one right here, first and foremost. That's what I realized. When I realized this, there was no emotional fireworks. There was no jumping up and down. It was such a staggering and profound realization. It was such a clear, just such a clear and obvious fact that I just sat there for about 60 minutes, just like this. Just holding my breath, holding my mouth at the awe of it, realizing what I was realizing and knowing for sure that this is the ultimate answer. This is the answer that I was seeking. It's the answer to why anything exists at all and how it could possibly come into being. That was perfectly clear to me. This was clear on a plane of consciousness, which is unlike any normal plane of consciousness. So the plane of consciousness that you're on right now cannot understand what I am talking about. This is a radically different plane of consciousness. and you do not know how to get to that plane of consciousness from the one that you're at right now, because it's such a radically different plane of consciousness. At that plane of consciousness, you no longer care about identification with yourself. You no longer care about living or dying. That is sort of the universal perspective. You're sort of switching from the human perspective and you're jumping into the universal perspective, which is just a runaway chain reaction of being. Infinite forms. Every possible form that could ever possibly be. And the substance of these forms is nothing. It's undefined. Being is undefinable. You can't say anything about it. You can't say that it exists or does not exist. You can't say it's an illusion or it's not an illusion. You can't say it's real or unreal. You can't say anything about it. But when I'm talking to you, the best way to get you the right idea about it is to say that it's as though you're experiencing an infinite hallucination or an infinite hologram. That's sort of what reality is like. It's just like this infinite hologram. It's hollow. That's why they call it the void. It is the void with a capital T and a capital V. But the void is not a hole. The void is this. This is the void. This is the absolute. So that's what I became conscious of. Now, how did this happen? How did this awakening get triggered? Let me give you a little bit of the backstory. It's rather interesting. Well, as you may know, I just came back from a Hawaii meditation retreat, but this awakening did not happen there. I actually shot about 3 hours of footage from Hawaii, which I'm in the process of uploading right now. It takes a while to upload all this content. So I'm going to upload those videos. They'll be available in a few days on my blog, exclusively on my blog. You won't see it on my YouTube channel. So go check it out there when it's available. There's some juicy insights for you there. But I came back from this Hawaii retreat. I had 7 days there meditating a lot. And I had some mixed results. I had some great lessons and learnings, but also I had some failures, which you'll see if you watch those videos. And I didn't get any big breakthroughs. But I came back and I was much more conscious, of course, as you are after a long retreat, meditating morning till night. But I was also frustrated. I was frustrated with my lack of progress. I was frustrated because I felt like I should have gotten more from that retreat. I was frustrated with self-inquiry because I feel like I've been doing self-inquiry for 4 years now and I've been beating this dead horse over and over again. And I just, I wanted to put an end to the seeking. So I scheduled an energy transmission session with an enlightened psychic. This I actually scheduled before I even went on the Hawaii retreat. It was on my books for close to a month. And I paid good money for it. And I just wanted to try this out as an experiment. So what this is traditionally called Shaktipat. You might have heard about this if you read a lot of the Hindu traditions, where traditionally you have gurus, and certain gurus, if they have siddhis or they have paranormal abilities, which, you know, some people believe in them, some people don't believe in them, but these siddhis can be real for sure, which is not to say there aren't scammers out there, but you can definitely find a guru who has siddhis. And one of the siddhis is the ability to transmit consciousness just through looking at you, not even touching you, just is sort of called an energy transmission or Shaktipat. So I scheduled one of these sessions just because I like to experiment with stuff. I like to try all sorts of crazy stuff. I wasn't like, you know, totally certain that it would work. In fact, I was like 50-50. Like maybe it doesn't work at all. Maybe it works somewhat. Maybe it works totally. I don't know. Maybe it'll help me. Maybe it'll help me finish my job. So I hope that it would sort of like finish me, put an end to the seeking, because that's supposedly what it could do. And supposedly it only really helps those people who are already on the edge, who have already had awakenings, but their awakenings, maybe they've had them, but they haven't stuck, or they've had them, but it's like they're still half-baked, not fully realized, you know, those sorts of cases. It doesn't usually work when you take someone off the street and just do it on someone who has no idea what enlightenment is. So I scheduled this, and the day before I was supposed to have this session. I was excited for it. When my head hit the pillow that night, though, my intuition kicked in, and I just listened to it and it said, you can't do this. You must walk this path solo. And I had to listen to my intuition. I didn't want to listen to it because I was frustrated with seeking. So I'd be glad to put an end to it if I could. And I'm interested in experimenting with stuff. So I'm interested in trying out new stuff and just seeing how it works. But what my intuition told me here is that my job was to follow through on the methods that I have started already. Specifically, my job was to prove the 5-MeO-DMT path. My job was to, as I said a year and a half ago when I started with psychedelics and with 5-MeO-DMT, my job was to prove that it was possible to become totally enlightened through 5-MeO-DMT. And I felt like, and this is what my intuition was telling me, is that if I did this transmission thing, and that if it worked, that would actually, that would be breaking my path. So the next day, I declined the transmission, even though I paid good money for it. And that was that. And then I was pretty bummed out for the rest of that day because, you know, I was second guessing myself. Yeah, I listened to my intuition, but then how do you distinguish between whether it's your intuition or your ego? Was it just arrogance? Was it my pride? Was it my not wanting to get help from other people? And maybe that was just my spiritual ego coming into play. You know, so I was sort of dealing with all this, second guessing myself. But also in the back of my mind, I also kind of knew that that was the choice I had to make. Yes, this made my work more difficult. And so, of course, I was bummed out for the rest of that day because I was wondering, like, well, how long is it going to take me now? How many more years am I going to keep doing this stupid self-inquiry, keep having these glimpses and awakenings, but then not finishing and still feeling like there's more to find, still feeling like I don't really understand why reality exists and why it's here? That was my ultimate driving question. And I still felt like, yeah, I had some insights into it, but just like, there was more. I knew there was more. I felt there was more. And so I got bummed out about that. And then at around midnight of that night, my intuition kicked in again and told me that now it's time to do 5-MeO-DMT right now, tonight. And usually I don't do psychedelics on short notice. Usually I plan them out a few days ahead, a week ahead. I never just get this urge to just do some psychedelics and then I run off and do them. Almost never. Never do I do that for safety reasons. But in this case, my intuition was telling me you got to get into it now because you've declined that path. Now follow through on this path. And what's interesting about that is that I haven't done 5-MeO-DMT in 1.5 years. Ever since my big, big, big breakthrough, which I shot a video about. I hadn't done it. I've done other psychedelics, which I've talked about, and I've posted reports on, and I've even posted videos of. So, yeah, I've done those, but 5-MeO, you got to understand that 5-MeO is no ordinary psychedelic. This is a beast all onto itself. So I was scared to go back. I really needed that 1.5 years just to fully integrate that massive, massive breakthrough experience that I had 1.5 years ago. I needed all that time and I needed all these smaller trips to fully integrate, to think it all through. And I still wasn't totally sure if I was ready, but I listened to my intuition because I sort of now committed to this path. And I said, okay, I'll do a baby dose. I'll do the smallest dose I've ever done, which is 10 milligrams. Before that, I did 12 milligrams. That was my smallest dose. This is 10 milligrams. I just wanted to kind of ease my way back into it because I knew that I've done a lot of integrating, a lot of growing, and I've become much more sensitive over the last 1.5 years. So I knew that I couldn't just take a massive dose. It might be way too strong. Even 10 milligrams, I wasn't sure what that was going to do. Now, for most people, 10 milligrams will just make their heart pound and not much more than that. You won't have any super profound spiritual experiences on 10 milligrams for most people. So I took this baby dose And my intuition further told me that I have to try a new method of administration. Before, I snorted it. Other people like to smoke it. I don't like to smoke it. And here it said I have to try it rectally. So I took a small needleless syringe, no needle, and I administered it rectally by dissolving in some water. It's not as disgusting as it sounds. And literally within 5 minutes, it came on. It comes on ridiculously fast. You won't believe how fast it comes on rectally. I mean, it's pretty much the same speed as through your nose. You just think that, you know, it would take longer for it to travel up to your brain from your butt. But no, it takes about 5 minutes. That's all it takes. It comes on very quickly. So what I did is I just laid on the floor and waited for 5 minutes for this thing to come on. I had fear. I had uncertainty. My heart was pounding. I didn't know how deep this was going to go. And I felt like, man, maybe it's going to go too deep. And then it happened. Precisely around the 5 minute mark. What happened is that all my fear sort of just crescendoed and then just melted away within about a minute after the 5 minute mark. It just melted away, and then I just eased my way into absolutely infinite consciousness. All borders collapsed, all sense of being my body collapsed, and just this crystal clarity. I just ascended into this new plane of consciousness from which I became everything. And I just looked around the room. There was no funky visuals. It was a very calm and you might almost say sober trip. There was very little monkey mind. There was very little of any kind of distractions or this or that or body highs. There's like very little of anything. It was just pure consciousness. Just my consciousness became infinite. That's all that happened. That's the magic of 5-MeO. And especially with this new administration method, which I sort of discovered here for myself and have proven now to myself, this to me now is the perfect administration method because it's smoother and it's more gradual than snorting or smoking. And this is actually ideal. It's especially ideal when you want to fully understand, get that calm state of mind to fully understand in a sort of meditative state. You just fully understand exactly what's happening. There's no doubt. There's no questions. There's no like wondering, oh, what's going on with me? And what is this thing? And what is that thing? Like sometimes when you take a trip on mushrooms or some other substance, LSD or whatever, DMT, then, you know, weird stuff happens and you're not sure why it's happening, what it means or where it's going. None of that happened here. Here, it was just perfectly clear awakening. And so I just awoke. And this was the deepest awakening that I've ever experienced. Deeper than even my 30 milligrams of 5-MeO DMT, which I took a year and a half ago, which just thrust me into the absolute, but in a way that I still felt separate from the absolute. And I still felt like the absolute in that trip was like an object that was separate from me and also separate from my present experience. Whereas here, what was so remarkable was that the absolute wasn't separate from me or some other object. It wasn't some void somewhere that I glimpsed. It was my living experience. It was my entire body. Every single object. I remember looking at a book. I remember looking at a bunch of books on my coffee table and all these books that I can just see infinity, infinity, infinity. It's just infinity. Of course, every book here must exist exactly as it sits. Every angle of every book on my bookshelf must be arranged precisely in that manner because that's exactly what absolute infinity entails. It entails every possible arrangement of every possible book, of every possible character in every possible book that has ever been written, and the way that they're arranged right now on my table. It entails everything. There's nothing which is excluded. And so that's how it happened. The peak of the experience lasted for about an hour and a half. Usually 5-MeO, if you snort it, it lasts at most 40 minutes. By 45 minutes, you're completely down to baseline. When you take it rectally, it lasts about twice as long. It's more mild, it's more gentle, it's more smooth, but it also feels much more stable and more consistent. And you have time to really soak in more of it. It doesn't just hit you like a sledgehammer over your head to the point where you're so dizzy, you're spinning around, you got stars, over your head and little Tweety birds. You don't really understand what's going on. Here, it's just like, imagine if you could go from being an ordinary person to being a Zen meditator who has meditated for 40 years, a Zen master who has meditated every day for 40 years, and you can just transition from being a regular person who's never meditated to being this 40-year Zen master, and you were able to do that within the span of 5 minutes. That's what it is. As this happened to me, I also felt chakras opening, especially in my head. I felt changes in energy. I felt my entire mind rewiring itself. I felt this chakra here, the third eye chakra, and the crown chakra opening up. I don't know if they were opened completely. I guess not, but there was definitely stuff going on there. I especially became very sensitive to that because over the last month, I have a yoga practice that I've been doing to open up all my chakras. And so I'm becoming more and more sensitive to that. And so the 5-MeO just synergized perfectly with that. And I felt like there was a sort of permanent rewiring going on there. And then after about an hour and a half, the whole thing just kind of gradually subsided, but my understanding didn't go away. In fact, this understanding is so obvious and so simple that, like, it's not dependent upon an experience. It's not dependent upon a state. Right now, I'm standing here before you. I'm not in any kind of special mystical state, but it's very clear to me that all of this is the absolute. The relative is the absolute. That's the most complete form of enlightenment that there is to realize that the relative and the absolute are one. Form is formlessness. Infinity is nothing. God is this. This is God. I am God. I am every possible configuration. No matter what state I'm in, it's infinite. And there's no dying, because it's just one object, it's infinity. So infinity just has all these different forms that it takes. So of course this body will die, all these perceptions will end. And what'll happen then? Well, infinity goes on. That's also part of, my death is a part of infinity. My death as a human being, that's just one configuration of infinity out of infinite configurations of infinity. And there's no difference between this body versus some other body. So even though this body will die, another body will live on. And if that body dies, if all the human beings on this planet die from some nuclear holocaust, doesn't matter because the planet will still remain. If the entire planet gets destroyed through some Death Star machine, doesn't matter because the sun will remain. Once the sun gets extinguished because billions of years pass and it just dies out from heat death and maybe collapses into a black hole, doesn't matter because the black hole is there. If the black hole evaporates through Hawking radiation and then there's nothing left and the entire universe goes into heat death, it doesn't matter because there's infinite other universes and I am all of them. And if all of them die, it doesn't matter either because I am not existing in any particular configuration at any particular time, but I am every possible configuration across all times simultaneously. I've already occurred forever and I will occur forever. And so there can be no such thing as death. And of course, there really is no such thing as life either. There's just infinity. That's all it is. It's just infinity. But you have to understand that infinity is not a one-dimensional thing like on a number line you have from 0 to infinity, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to infinity. That's just the natural numbers to infinity. That's not infinity. Infinity is this. You're experiencing it right now. This is absolute infinity. That number line, that's just one dimension of infinity. You need to imagine an object which is infinitely dimensional. And then what you get is you get this. You get reality. You get me saying these words right now to you, and every other possible word that I could say in every possible configuration, those are also all being said but you're not experiencing them right now because, hey, someone has to be experiencing these particular words, because infinity means someone has to be experiencing these particular words right now. And so that's the version of infinity that you're living out right now. And somebody else is living out some other version. And there's infinite versions. There's infinity within infinity within infinity within infinity. I could say an infinite number of words, and that's just one little infinity within the larger infinity. I could look an infinite number of ways, and so could you. And I could have an infinite number of feelings, and it could be an infinite number of colors, infinite number of sizes and shapes and configurations and physical laws, and all of it is. And all of it is, of course, nothing as well. Because form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. And this is just completely apparent to me. It's not just something I know, it's something that I am. So you might wonder, Leo, what changed after this experience? Okay, so you came down from the 5MEO, and then what changed? Well, firstly, like I said, is now I have perfect knowledge of what reality is. There's no questions anymore. I know what it is. There's no mystery anymore. It's the ultimate answer. It's the answer that you cannot get through science, no matter how much science you do. Which is not to say science is bad. It's not to say science is wrong or you should stop doing science, but science will never get you this answer. Because every thought that there is infinite. I am science. I am religion. I am rationality. I am irrationality. I'm every possibility of every possible thought that can be thought. Whether it makes sense or doesn't matter. Whether it's true or not, doesn't matter. Whether it's true science or false science, whether it's pseudoscience, whether it's religious mumbo jumbo or new ageism or whatever, whether it's some conspiracy theory or some outlandish hoax or scam, it doesn't matter. I am all those. You see, it's a complete transcendence of knowledge. Knowledge dissolves into being. There is only being. Knowledge is really just being. So that changed. There's a sense of satisfaction, very deep satisfaction, in knowing what everything is and why it has to be this way. That has changed for me. There is also a cessation of seeking. I was very much driven by seeking for the last 4 years, and really, if I think back, for the last 20 years, since I was a teenager, I was fascinated by why does everything exist? I wanted to know. And now it seems like that journey of 20 years from my early teenage years through philosophy and through all the self-help and through all this non-duality and all this seeking and all these retreats and all this sort of stuff, that this seeking has ceased because there's like nothing to seek anymore. And that's really satisfying because there's a lot of suffering that goes on with seeking. Now, the mistake that people make, this is the Neo-Advaita trap, is they say, oh, well, stop seeking. There's nothing to seek because enlightenment doesn't exist. You're already enlightened. No, it doesn't work like that. You've got to seek really, really hard and suffer the seeking. Yes, the seeking creates suffering. Yes, the seeking is egoic, but you still got to do it. You got to go through all that seeking to get to a point where then you actually arrive at the ultimate understanding. And then, of course, the seeking is not necessary anymore. The seeking has brought you to your destination. But don't think that you can stop seeking before you've gotten to the destination. That would be like imagining that, hey, I want to drive from Los Angeles to New York. And maybe I don't need to drive. Maybe I'm already in New York. So maybe I'll just leave my car parked and somehow magically I get to New York. No, you're not going to get to New York. To get to New York from Los Angeles, you got to drive 2,500 miles or however many miles it is. You got to drive that. And you got to endure all the problems along the route. And that route, you better believe there's going to be like flat tires and you got to fuel your gas and you got to like fix your broken engine and oil, change oil and all this sort of stuff. You got to do all that. You got to go through the suffering of all that to get to New York. And once you get to New York, then you can say, oh yeah, of course, I don't need my car anymore because now I'm in New York. But until you're in New York, you need your car. It would be very foolish to throw away your car while you're still in Los Angeles or halfway along your journey. Because wherever you throw away your car, that's where you're going to be. This isn't rocket science, very simple logic, but still a lot of people get this wrong. What else has changed for me is that there is an increase in my baseline level of awareness. So I'm not in some sort of blissed out state right now. I'm not in sort of hyper mystical or psychedelic trance. I'm just in my normal state of consciousness, my normal state of awareness, but it's raised. I'm just more aware of what everything is. Like I'm picking up an object, I'm aware that it's infinite. I'm aware that it's inevitable because this is all part of absolute infinity. What else has changed for me is that my meditation has skyrocketed. And in particular, what has helped with my meditation is that before it was difficult for me to do meditation because I was always seeking. So when I sit down to do meditation, I'm seeking for, you know, answers to these deep existential questions, which actually is counterproductive to meditation because the point of meditation is just to sit and be still. So now I'm able to sit and just be still a lot better than before because now I feel like, well, I've already got my answer, so there's nothing to search for. So all there is for me just to sit and to be as infinity. And so here I just sit and I be infinity. And that's all that meditation sort of boils down to now. What else has changed for me is that I'm very aware that everything is totally inevitable. Every possibility is. So what are you complaining about? What are you criticizing? Who are you judging? What are you moralizing about? You don't like that person. You don't like that group of people. You don't like that politician. You don't like that jerk. You don't like that violent person. You don't like this Nazi. You don't like that guy. So what are you complaining about? Absolute infinity includes every single possibility. It includes all the good and includes all the evil. And it must be that way. It cannot be otherwise. So you complaining about it is completely pointless. And yet at the same time, it's completely inevitable that you're complaining because absolute infinity must, of course, include you complaining about things that are inevitable, but still you're complaining about them. But of course, if you want, you could stop complaining about them. And then absolute infinity will also include that possibility of you realizing, hey, there's no point in complaining. And yeah, that possibility is also part of absolute infinity. So that's really huge for me because that is the key insight that allows you to stop rejecting life, to stop rejecting reality, right? When you realize that it can only be absolute infinity, then you realize that there's no point in resisting anymore. Everything must be accepted. You would be a fool not to accept it. See? It would sort of be like judging, I don't know, like judging your dog for going to the bathroom, period, like ever. I don't mean going to the bathroom on your carpet or on your couch. Yeah, you can get mad about that because, you know, dogs aren't supposed to do that. But I mean, imagine if a person bought a dog and then every time the dog took a dump at all, anywhere, even on the grass, he would get upset about it. Just like every time, you're like, why are you taking a crap? Why? Stop it. Stop taking a crap. Imagine if there was a human being who had that attitude towards the dogs, towards his dog. Well, you could see that person would be frustrated his entire life and for no good reason because his expectations are just completely wrong. A dog can't be a dog unless it takes a crap. It's a living creature. All living creatures need to expel waste. All right. That's inevitable. Now, of course, it's not inevitable that they need to take a crap in your shoe. So, okay, maybe you get mad about that, but it's inevitable that dogs need to poo. Okay, you can't stop them. You can't sew their butthole shut. So the mistake there isn't with the dog. The mistake there is with the person who has these silly expectations about the dog. Well, now let's take that analogy and now expand it to everything. Everything is absolutely inevitable. So what are you criticizing? Are you criticizing that your dog is taking a dump in your shoe or on your carpet or on your dining room table? But that's also inevitable. Now you might say, oh, Leo, but we can change the dog. We can train the dog to stop doing that. Yes, and that's also inevitable. It's inevitable that you can, and it's inevitable that you can't. It's inevitable that people kill each other. It's inevitable that people rape each other. It's inevitable that there are concentration camps. It's inevitable that there's Hitler. It's inevitable that there's terrorists. It's inevitable that there are school shooters. Now you might say, oh, Leo, but we can pass gun laws to stop school shootings. Yes, you can. That's also inevitable. Every single possibility is inevitable. You might say, oh, Leo, but we can prevent all those deaths of all these innocent people. Yes, you can. Maybe. If you can. But it's also inevitable that you can't. Every possibility is here. Every single one. That's why it's so staggering of an insight. You see, not just to know this intellectually, as a theory or as a philosophy, but to actually to experience it as being the case. It completely stops all your criticism and all your rejection of reality just cold. It's like you can't reject anything anymore. Everything is you. What are you rejecting? Everything is literally your body. It's sort of like, imagine if you were walking around and you were angry at your pinky for being a part of your hand, and every time you see your pinky, you get mad at it because, like, why are you here? I don't want you to exist. You shouldn't be here. That's what you're doing when you're criticizing or you're judging other people or situations. You're not realizing that it's inevitable. Every mistake is inevitable. Ignorance is inevitable. Evil is inevitable. As well as everything else. So that has changed for me. That's a very important, it's a very important insight to have. Because that really changes your whole attitude towards people. Changes your whole attitude towards situations. Now when a bad situation happens, yeah, of course I prefer that it doesn't happen. But it's also like I realize, oh yeah, of course it had to happen. It's inevitable. There's no point in complaining about it. Aside from these things, not much else has changed. My mind is still chatty and quite active. I do not have some sort of zen-like no mind. Suffering still happens. I am not in a blissful state, and I am not free of all emotional suffering. Something doesn't go my way, and I get triggered by it, and I don't want it to be that way. Or if I'm experiencing pain in my body, and I don't like it, and it kind of makes me annoyed or frustrated or causes me suffering, yeah, that still happens. Definitely. And I can still get triggered by stuff and, you know, big calamities and crises could happen in my life and those interfere with my agenda. And if I'm really attached to my agenda and I want my agenda to be successful, then of course that's going to affect me and I'm going to suffer for that. My addictions are still present. I have some internet addictions that I'm working on. I have some smartphone addictions, you know, stuff like that. It's still there. Those didn't go away. Those need additional work. My sexual cravings have not changed at all, pretty much. In fact, maybe they're even stronger than before because I feel more free. I feel more passionate. I feel like I have more energy. I feel like chakras have opened up and stuff is flowing more smoothly. So actually, the sexual drive is very strong. And yeah, so some of those, you know, enlightenment gets idealized a lot. And I don't know, you know, people can have different levels of enlightenment, different degrees of enlightenment, and different amounts of embodying their enlightenment. So for some people, you know, they have an insight and maybe it does stop all their suffering. And maybe it does quiet their mind completely. And maybe it does stop their sexual cravings and all this. And maybe now they are in some blissed out state. For me, that's not the case. I'm just saying, you know, there's different kinds of awakenings that people have. And of course, it depends. Your awakening through psychedelics will be different than your awakening through meditation, will be different than your awakening through some Shaktipat, will be different than your awakening through some other thing. It can be different or they can be the same. You know, there's just a lot of complexity and variability there. So be careful not to oversimplify this awakening process. And there's different facets of things you can awaken to. So what was really remarkable about this awakening that I had, I felt, was just how complete it felt. It felt like all the pieces came together. I became conscious of what I am. I became conscious of what reality is. I became conscious of why reality is. I became conscious of what other people are. I became conscious of just, like, I don't know. Maybe there's a few facets that I missed. I didn't really get a strong sense of like absolute infinite love. I've had those before. I didn't get so much of that. So maybe the love component was a little bit lacking in this awakening. But like a lot of stuff came together for me. Now you might wonder, well, Leo, is this really total enlightenment? Or are you just kidding yourself? And what does total really mean? So again, I'm using that word. Don't take it too seriously. I'm using it rather loosely here. Mostly I use that word total because that's how it felt for me in the moment. It felt total. That doesn't mean there aren't more total ones. It just felt total for me in the moment. And it has certainly been the most total out of the ones that I've had. And I've had a handful now, probably five or so. I don't know. I've stopped counting them. So of them all, for me, it felt like the most total. I asked Peter Ralston once, what was the deepest enlightenment or awakening that he's ever had? And I'll never forget his answer. It was very, very profound. He kind of looked at me puzzled, and then he said, you know, they were all the deepest. And that's right. That's exactly how it feels. Because when you're having your awakening, you're so present in the moment, there's no other. You're not comparing this moment to anything else. So whatever's happening in that moment feels total by definition. But nevertheless, even if that's true, still, when you're comparing different awakenings across time, then some of them are more total than others. So how do you judge that? Well, just subjectively. It's a subjective judgment. What does a total enlightenment really mean across the board for everybody? I don't know. You know, I think that people are too variable to use such a simplistic label. And there's way too many components and nuances to enlightenment to call it total for everybody as the same thing. What I felt though, or what I feel now is, if you're familiar with the 10 ox herding pictures, which is a map for the stages of enlightenment, 10 different stages from the Zen tradition, then it feels like now I'm at the point where I've passed stage 4, which is catching the ox. I've caught the ox, that's what it felt like. And now I'm moving into stage 5, which is taming of the ox. Now that's just stage 5. That's like only half the steps. Now there's 5 more steps beyond that, which I won't get into here. I'll shoot an episode about those stages in the future, the 10 ox herding pictures. But, there's more stages. So what happens after you catch the ox is basically a form of mastery, a form of taming the ox, riding the ox back home, and all the transcending the ox, all this sorts of stuff. So I don't consider myself a master by any means. I feel like I still have much more room for growth. I still feel like personal development, basic psychological methods and techniques still have a lot of relevance for me. There's still a lot of emotional stuff that I want to work on, a lot of basic personal development stuff that I want to work on. So it's not like I have transcended self-actualization work, not by any means. I still feel and expect that there will be deeper enlightenments in the future. So by no means am I saying that I have maxed myself out or that I have reached, you know, the promised land and that now I'm not going to do anything anymore. No, I'm actually very motivated to do more personal development work, and I'm very motivated just to sit and to sort of bask in that infinity and quiet my mind down even more and just sort of let that infinity rewire my mind, maybe open up my chakras and all that sort of stuff. And very importantly, I feel like I've proven the 5-MeO path for myself. And I can't really speak about how effective 5-MeO will be for you, but if you are like me, then you will discover, if you do 5-MeO, that it is the single most powerful, most direct, and most no-nonsense tool that exists for this work. It is the most pure path to absolute consciousness that there is, that I have ever discovered or learned about or studied. And I've experimented with quite a lot of different techniques and different traditions. It's just in a class all by itself. And what's so sad is that so few people know about it. And I've talked to quite a few enlightened masters about 5-MeO DMT. And usually what they do is they just dismiss it. You say, oh, that's just a psychedelic. That's just a drug. That's just a substance. That's not real enlightenment. That doesn't really work. It can't really work. You can't really become enlightened by putting a chemical into your brain. I have completely shattered that myth for myself. Now you can say, oh, Leo, but what if you're deluded? How do you really know? What if you're just hallucinating? What if you're just kidding yourself? From your perspective, yeah, I could be lying to you. I could be deluded. I could be hallucinating or whatever. But from my perspective, there's no way. I know what I know. I know what I've experienced. The absolute is the absolute. And the effectiveness of 5-MeO at taking you to the absolute is just mind-blowing. It just baffles me that such a technology exists. It baffles me. It just baffles me. It will utterly baffle you when it's happening to you. When that 5-MeO is working on you within 5 minutes, you will be completely and utterly baffled, not just by your awakening, which will be a very deep and real awakening, but by how you got there. That's the most amazing thing, is how you got there and how easy and effortless it really is compared to spending 40 fucking years meditating every day in some Zen monastery. And still, many of those Zen masters have not gotten to the ultimate level of understanding. Many of them still don't understand why the universe exists. Sure, they've had glimpses here and there, and they've, you know, become conscious of stuff. They've had their Satori experiences, but, you know, there's so much depth. There's so many layers to this stuff. How deeply have you experienced it is the question. So what's left for me, you might wonder? Well, a lot of stuff is left for me as far as development. Embodiment. Now, my focus is going to be on embodiment. I want to embody the infinite as much as I possibly can in my words, in my actions, in my emotions, in my behaviors, in my meditation sessions, in my communications with other people, in my relationships, everywhere. And that's the bulk of the work. It feels like now the work has really begun. What's left for me is basking in the being, just sitting in the stillness. I feel like I need to spend hundreds, thousands of hours just sitting in the stillness. If I wasn't running actualize.org, I would probably buy a cabin in the woods and go live there for a couple of years, not to speak to anybody, and just sit there and just bask in the stillness. That's what's necessary to really embody and master this stuff. I feel like I still need to work towards a state of no mind. My mind is still very active. I have always been extremely conceptual. That has been my greatest obstacle on this path. It's very clear to me now in retrospect. It's been a big, much bigger obstacle than it is for most people, because I'm much more conceptual than most people. I think my mind works slightly differently than most people's minds. So, you know, it's precisely because the 5-MeO is so effective and so fast that it doesn't require you to still your mind. Because if you're like in a Zen monastery, the only way you're going to reach a natural experience of the absolute, like 5-MeO will show you, is through silencing your mind so much over years and years and years that by the time you experience the absolute, your mind's going to be very, very, very quiet. Well, with the 5-MeO, it's a little bit different. It's like you get the absolute now, but then you got to do the follow-up work to quiet down your mind, because your mind's basically just going to be as active as before, because these are habits of the mind which have nothing to do with the absolute, really. These are separate things, and people sometimes confuse them. But still, I notice that my thoughts can cause me suffering, and that actually my thoughts are probably my chief source of suffering. And so for me to really embody the absolute and to embody that sort of stillness and bliss, I need to quiet down my mind. So I'm just going to be spending a lot of time just sitting in stillness, meditating. And I'm much more sort of, I guess, eager to meditate, because before it felt like meditation was always directed towards a goal, whereas now it feels like when I meditate, there is no goal and I can just let go. Now, of course, I should have been doing that from the very beginning. But see, the problem is you don't know that until after you've had your awakening. That's only clear in retrospect. It's like, oh, yeah, I should have been doing that from day one. But for 4 years, I haven't been doing that. Oh, okay, yeah, now I know better. It works like that. What else is left for me is emotional mastery. I still have a lot of emotional stuff they got to work through. Fears and anxieties and pettiness and jealousy and this sorts of stuff, you know. Still, that stuff needs to be worked through. Clearing up my chakras and energy blockages in my body, that's something that's big that I'm working on right now. I'll definitely talk about that in the future, don't worry. It's a very important component of this whole path of personal development. Very, very important. It's also quite a complicated subject with a lot of nuances there of how to actually do that. There's a lot of different possible techniques. There's various pitfalls that you can fall into. There's ways you can damage yourself and do it the wrong way. But, you know, I have my yoga practice for that. So I'll be using my yoga practice and some other techniques, which I'll discuss in the future, for how to unblock these energy blockages. And I feel like also my physical health is connected. So I have some physical problems with my health. I feel like those are also connected to energy blockages that I have. So I got to work on those. I got to work on removing certain addictions from my life, like I said already. I've got to work on living more healthy, cleaning up my diet even more, and just cleaning up my environment and healthy living overall. I'm very passionate about that. I got to work on developing more compassion for other people. That's something that I'm very sensitive to now after this awakening. And I feel like after every awakening, I become more and more sensitive. And to me, it becomes more and more clear how much importance there is in practicing compassion and how powerful of a tool it is. It's an extremely powerful and persuasive tool. You know, if you're having problems with somebody in a relationship, the best way to fix that problem is with compassion and with love, not with blaming and finger pointing and arguing and bickering and all this sorts of stuff. So that's something I'll be working on. I'll be working on making my communications with you more loving and more compassionate as well. My communications via my comments and via the posts that I do on my forum and so on. What else is left for me is I will be continuing to prove the effectiveness of 5-MeO in the future with small follow-up doses. So I'm not really interested in, you know, having huge breakthrough experiences. It's more about small, very stable, very steady doses that I can use to just complete the integration. So I feel like that is in the plans as well. And, you know, who knows? Like I said, there's probably deeper enlightenments and probably more stuff will be revealed to me, other interesting facets and insights. You know, there's just so many ancillary insights around the periphery of this thing called awakening that is also very interesting that psychedelics reveal to you. And so that is what's left. There's a lot of stuff to do, a lot of work to do. I'm excited about it. I feel like I'm more calm and more grounded now because I'm not chasing after the answer so much. And now I can just sort of like calmly do the work that I know I need to do. And my new awareness now shows me exactly how I need to do that work and exactly what the path is. So the path for me now looks quite clear. Of course, my life purpose has only been strengthened by this experience. I still want to teach In fact, more than ever, I still have lots of insights that I want to share. I have many books that I want to write. I have many videos that I want to shoot. I have many techniques I want to research and test out on myself. I have many other mystical states that I want to experience and to see what those are like and to see what people are talking about with those. And I'm excited more than ever to teach people in person, not just through video, to improve my teaching skills, to be more effective of a communicator and be more effective of a teacher, to offer better analogies and better examples. So for me, life purpose just gets supercharged with these awakenings. Because my greatest wish now for you is that you in your life become conscious of why all of this exists. That's ultimately, if I could just choose one thing that you can get from me that I can gift to you, is the injunction to go and figure that out and to have that insight for yourself. Do not stop on this path until you are completely certain of why everything exists and why it must exist and why it cannot be any other way. That's my wish for you. That's the ultimate. For me, that is the ultimate. That is the most profound thing you can become conscious of in this reality, I think. And everything else is secondary. And that insight is so profound and so satisfying that I just wish that you could experience that for yourself. Be one of the handful of people on this earth who has ever awoken to this understanding. Very, very, very few people have. Very few people. Even many so-called enlightened people have not really truly awoken to this understanding of why everything exists and why it must exist. It's you. You're it. You're the reason for everything. You are it. And I want you to experience that moment for yourself of when you realize this. And when you do, I want you to imagine me smiling down on you, because that's what gives me the greatest satisfaction, is to be able to guide people through this whole process so they can ultimately, they can get to that point. That's the pinnacle. That's the crowning achievement. That's the crown jewel. And then, of course, come on back, and there's still a lot of stuff to work on after you understand that. So don't get cocky, and don't get complacent just because you understand that thing there. You still got to take care of all the other crap in your life that is probably highly dysfunctional. So there you go. Make sure to check out my Hawaii videos. They're coming soon. They'll be on the blog exclusively. They are not going to be posted on my YouTube channel. That's it. Please click the like button for me and come check out actualize.org. This is where you'll find the blog. This is where you'll find some other resources like the Life Purpose course, the book list, the forum. And just in general, stick with me. My path is still only getting started. This is like the beginning of the end, and then a new beginning. A new chapter is sort of opening up for me. Over the next 6 months, you're going to see a huge transformation in myself as I work to embody all of this. And then who knows what lies ahead beyond that? I don't know. I'm more and more open these days to living more adventurously and more spontaneously, and to changing stuff around, to moving around, to being different places, to meeting new people, to talking about new things, to trying out new things, to teaching in new styles and different modes and different ways. So I just don't know. We'll see where it goes, but it'll probably be exciting. So stick around. You're watching it happen and unfold before you. And I hope that inspires you to do it for yourself.